May it please the court, my name is Melissa Liff, attorney registration number 40445. I'm here today with Dennis Polk on behalf of the appellant, TCD Inc. I'd like to start today, I think the briefs cover these issues pretty thoroughly, but I'd like to start by emphasizing the purpose of the complaint rule as articulated by the Colorado Supreme Court in the 2004 Cotter Corp versus American Empire case. That court specifically stated that the purpose of the complaint rule is to protect the insured's reasonable expectation of a defense. Specifically, the court points out that by purchasing insurance, the insured reasonably expects that he will not be required to reimburse the cost of defending an action that facially falls within the terms of the policy. Requiring that would defeat the basic reason for the purchase of insurance. The court went on to lay out two things an insurance company can do when it believes it does not have a duty to defend. It can reserve its rights and provide a defense or seek a declaratory judgment. American Family did not do either of those things here. If it had, it would have been entitled to go outside the four corners of the counterclaims and demonstrate it did not have a duty to defend. Likewise, TCD submits that it should be entitled to go outside the four corners of the counterclaims here to demonstrate American Family did in fact have a duty to defend.
Let me stop you for a moment.
Sure.
Both your brief and now your oral argument start out with this four corners rule.
Mm-hmm.
Are you acknowledging then that if we do not vary from the four corners of the, in this case, the counterclaim, if we do not vary from the four, go beyond the four corners of the counterclaim, are you acknowledging then that TCD cannot prevail in this case?
No, I'm not. I think even on the face of the counterclaim, TCD demonstrated there was coverage. The complaint lays, or excuse me, the counterclaims here lay out that the...
Then let me direct your attention to the allegations in the counterclaim.
Sure.
Which allegation in the counterclaim demonstrates or alleges property damage caused by an occurrence, which is, I believe, what the policy... Do you agree that's what the policy would require here? Property damage caused by an occurrence?
Yes.
Okay. Which allegation in the counterclaim alleges property damage caused by an occurrence?
Sure. I think paragraph 17 of the counterclaims discusses that the work was not completed in a workmanlike manner. It goes on to discuss issues with the counter flashings, defective metal flashings, the waterproof membrane. I think the counterclaims also specify that the work was inferior to contract specifications and defective.
So all of those allegations that it's not workmanlike, it was defective, it was incorrectly installed, wrap them up in a ball of wax, are allegations of defective work on the job that was done by, I forget the name of the
roofing
contractor. Petra, thank you, the roofing contractor.
Then
what do you do with the cases like General Security and others that say defective workmanship is not property damage caused by an occurrence? Because that's all it seems to be that 17 says.
I think it's clear that General Security is not considered instructive on the insured's reasonable expectation of a defense anymore. I think you have to go to 1320-808, which I realize brings up the issue of whether that statute applies to this matter. I also think it's instructive that
just assume for the moment that 1328-808 does not apply to this matter. It's not retroactive as the trial court found.
Sure.
I think what do we do with that? Do we have to follow General Security, which does defect at other cases, like even the 10th Circuit case says.
Well, General Security is a Colorado Court of Appeals decision, so I don't think this division is bound by that decision. I also think Greystone versus National Fire and Marine Insurance Company is instructive. I recognize that that's a 10th Circuit case from November of last year. That case specified that General Security is not something that should be followed. I also think, to get back to your question of property damage, the court in Greystone said, quote, damage to property caused by poor workmanship is generally neither expected nor intended. It may qualify under Colorado law as an occurrence, and liability coverage should apply. And I think that's where you get into the...
In both Greystone, as I read it, and in General Security, the damage that was alleged was damage to other than the work that the subcontractor was working on. And when they call it other property damage, and when they call it damage to non-defective property, I think is the term that Greystone is. Both of those allege or deal with damage to the property other than the actual construction work, no, they're not?
respectfully, I think the law still applies to this case and that there was damage to the roof. The court in Greystone says a correctly installed shingle does not normally fall and a correctly installed window does not ordinarily leak. The roof here leaked.
But in the four corners of the complaint, we don't have any allegations of property damage.
I think the counterclaims by stating that the work was not done in a workmanlike manner, the counter flashings, the metal flashings, the waterproof membrane, the inferior to contract specifications, all fall within that category. I also think it's important to go back to protecting the reasonable expectations of the insured and interpreting the counterclaims in that manner.
I want to just a bit, because you started off with the complaint rule.
Sure.
Aren't we bound by Cotter Corp? Isn't that a Supreme Court decision? And doesn't that make the complaint rule pretty hard and fast for us, for our court's purposes?
I don't think it makes it hard and fast. I do think Cotter Corp is a case the court should look to here, again, for the purposes of the complaint rule, to protect the reasonable expectations of TCD as an insured. I think that case discusses that the complaint rule is broad. You don't want to have an insurance company paying where it doesn't have a duty to defend, but there's also the goal of the complaint rule to create an incentive for an insurance company to defend. That didn't happen here. We submit today that when that doesn't happen, to protect the reasonable expectations of TCD, the court should go outside the four corners of the complaint, as American Family did not do what it was supposed to do, reserve its rights and provide a defense, or seek a declaratory judgment. And I think it's instructive that the Tenth Circuit has considered similar issues on two occasions. In 2010, in Impartment Investors versus Nutmeg Insurance, it discussed the purpose of the complaint rule and determined that in a parallel judicial proceeding, the insurer couldn't ignore allegations then in that proceeding of which it was aware. Likewise, American Family should not be allowed to ignore facts or evidence of which it was aware here. Similarly, in 2008, the Tenth Circuit in Pompa versus American Family Insurance carved out an exception to the complaint rule, and at page 1147 said, quote, given this authoritative support for some exceptions to the complaint rule, we believe that the Colorado Supreme Court would recognize an exception when doing so would not undercut the purposes served by that rule. Lending support to our belief is the Colorado Supreme Court's suggestion that it might, in an appropriate case, recognize such an exception. TCD submits that such an exception should apply here and that the court can, in fact, go outside the four corners of the counterclaim.
Let's assume for the moment that we agree with you and we were to go outside the four corners of the counterclaim. What is the evidence or what are the documents that you want us to look at or that you think the trial court should have looked at? Anything other than those two letters from October of 2007? The only thing that I found said in your brief are those two letters.
Yeah, I think the Sodaro notice and I think the arbitrator's decision.
The Sodaro notice is the letter of October 12th from the lawyer law firm to TCD's principal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what you call it. Okay.
Yeah.
What in the Sodaro notice constitutes evidence of property damage caused by an occurrence? It's the first sentence says, there's a discovery of roof defects, including but not limited to failure to meet its specifications, contract requirements, and building codes. Once again, I would characterize that, I think, as defective workmanship, not in property damage independent from the defective workmanship.
I think that can be classified as property damage. I also think the other document I would have you look at is the arbitrator's decision.
Is that in the record? Is it attached to your opposition
yeah,
motion?
It is in the record.
It's attached to the opposition to your motion for summary judgment?
Yes. The arbitrator discussed that leaks occur. And again, if you have leaks occurring, a defective roof doesn't leak. That's property damage. I would also, to touch on the issue of ongoing operations while we're on this topic, point out that the district court considered White's LLC versus Mid-Century Insurance, Court of Appeals case from 2007. In that case, the court discusses that there is not a duty to defend when the entire project is complete. We submit here that American Family did not demonstrate that the entire project was complete and that TCD created a disputed issue of material fact as to whether Petra, the subcontractor's operations, were ongoing.
You just shifted gears at us, I think.
Okay.
You just went through a different provision of the policy. You went through the you're insured provision, right?
Okay.
The you're insured provision says if the work's not complete, then there's still a coverage. But doesn't that whole provision still require there to be property damage from an occurrence?
Yes, it
okay.
does.
So we don't even have to reach that if we find the other provisions cover it. But if we find there's no property damage, we don't get to the you're insured.
I think for the reasons that I've discussed, the Sadar notice, the arbitrator's decision, and the counterclaims themselves, there is property damage. At this point, I'd like to reserve a few minutes for
okay.
rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Greg Richard, bar number 31948. I'm here on behalf of American Family Insurance, the appellee. The appellant has brought three issues to the forefront. First is whether the complaint rule, which has been continually applied by Colorado courts in both the state and federal courts, is still good law, and we submitted it and the court properly applied. Second, whether the policy, which was canceled on June 10, 2007, was in existence at the time CRS 1320-808 was enacted on May 21st, 2010, and we submit that the court properly considered that it was not. And third, whether there's a question regarding Petra Roofing's ongoing operations, despite the undisputed evidence that Petra had completed its work by March 5th, 2007, and we submit that the trial court properly determined that issue, that there were no more ongoing operations. Now, I'd like to start with the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals decision in United Fire versus Boulder Plaza, which applies equally to this case, in which the 10th Circuit said, we need not contemplate the meaning of existence. What the court was talking about there, as Judge Richmond pointed out during the appellant's argument, was that in the Boulder Plaza case, the court was able to determine the fact that there was no coverage there without a resort to 1320-808 or even general security, because, as was pointed out, there were no allegations of resultant property damage to something other than the subcontractor's work.
There were none in the counterclaim.
In Boulder Plaza, there was none in the...
I understand. And now you're trying to make the connection to this case. There were none in the counterclaim.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
But appellant says there were allegations of property damage outside the four corners of the complaint.
Not anything that was available to American Family at the time. American Family made its coverage decision, and the only thing that was available at the time American Family made its decision, which was in November and then November 2007 to January 2008.
So the Sadar notice and the arbitrator's decision?
No, the arbitrator's decision didn't come until September 11, 2010. The Sadar notice was the only thing available to American Family at the time it made its coverage decision.
Okay.
You'll see it in the record. There's an affidavit and a letter from Martin Ellis, the claims person for American Family, in which he indicated he spoke with counsel for TCD in the underlying matter at that time when it was still at the notice of claim process.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked that counsel, is there resultant property damage? And he was told, no, there is not.
The same counsel that wrote this letter, the Sadar notice, October 12th.
The Sadar notice was from
Carlson and Dunkelman.
Carlson Dunkelman was the lawyer for the opposing party who was making the claims against TCD.
The owner.
The property owner, correct, Your Honor.
Who did the person from Farmer speak to then about this interview?
The person from American Family
spoke to TCD.
Spoke with Craig Blockwick, who was counsel for TCD in the underlying case, which ended up going to arbitration.
So there was no property damage?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Ellis put that in his November 12, 2007 letter, he wrote in his November 12, 2007 denial letter, quote, you represented in our telephone conversation of today that no material leakage of the roof had occurred to date. There was nothing in the owner's notice letter to TCD dated 10/12/2007 to indicate there was any resultant damage to the subject building, save for the complaint of defects in the roofing work itself. Nobody from TCD, either Mr. Blockwick or Mr. Polk, when he wrote to try to get American Family to change its opinion in January 2008, they submitted no information to TCD, to American Family, that that statement was incorrect, which is important because, remember, back in 2007, 2008, there was nothing to defend. Under the policy, American Family has a right and obligation to defend a suit if the suit alleges property damage. There was no suit until TCD filed suit against Frisco in December 2008, and then Frisco filed the counterclaims February 13th, 2009. So there was a full another year between the coverage decision and the lawsuit.
When was the demand for coverage made?
At the time of the notice of claim in October 30, 2007. It was demand for coverage, but there was no suit. So there was nothing, there was no suit.
Was there a second demand after the counterclaims were filed?
No, not until TCD filed suit against the American Family,
yes,
which was April 23rd, 2009.
After Gateway filed its counterclaim, there was not a renewed demand for coverage under that to defend the counterclaims.
All there was a lawsuit brought by TCD for failure to do just that. But no subsequent tender, that's right, Your Honor. And so I think it's clear that based on the four corners of the counterclaims, there is certainly no allegations of resultant property damage. And so based on that alone, this court can uphold the trial court's decision of no coverage. There's also the issue of whether there's ongoing operations. I submit to you that the ongoing operations had ceased as of March 5th, 2007, and I think that the record on that is perfectly clear. There was, on January 22nd, 2007, what's called a progress payment, and that progress payment was essentially a first draw on the work that that Petra Roofing had completed. On March 5th, 2007, there was a second progress payment. That March 5th, 2007 second progress payment indicated that all work at this that Petra was performing was 100% complete. And if you, there's no evidence that Petra performed any work after that second progress payment. There was a discovery request sent to TCD in this action, where I asked, as of the last date on which Petra performed work on the project, was the work performed by Petra substantially completed? The answer, in one word, was yes. That's at page 544 of the record.
Williams asked the counsel for appellant, we don't even get to that issue if we don't find there was property damage caused by an occurrence, do we?
No. You could, like the case of Boulder Plaza, nothing matters if there was no allegations of property damage resulting from the work, as opposed to damage to the work itself. And the court need not rely on general security for that issue. Now, general security, when the legislature found disfavor with that, there was only one really minor issue with that decision that the legislature found disfavor with. With respect to the rest of the case, there was a general security essentially followed longstanding precedent. That one issue was on the question of occurrence and what's considered an accident. General security determined that defective construction is not an accident. Legislature says, we don't like that idea. We think that defective construction, I think Greystone said it best, that can be an occurrence if it causes property damage, but it didn't limit it to just any property damage. Property damage to something else that's non-defective. With respect to the rest of general security, it falls longstanding Colorado law on the Four Corners rule, on the issue of needed property damage. I mean, that's been law of Colorado for quite a long time.
Is there any case out there that says there's property damage could be caused? Defective work constitutes property damage? Yeah, no, that defective work constitutes property damage without the defective work resulting in some other property damage, like the roof falls down and kills somebody. That's
the property. Defective work in and of itself is not property damage. Yeah. There's no case that I've seen that holds that within Colorado. I believe that TCD attempted to cite some cases outside of Colorado that says there's a duty to defend when there's defective work that does not result in property damage, but no cases within Colorado, Your Honor. I'd next like to address the issue of the applicability of 1320-808. In case the court decides that there's a question about whether there's property damage alleged, 1320-808 does not apply here. It was not intended to apply here. Greystone got it right. The statute says in Section 3 applicability, this act applies to all insurance policies currently in existence or issued on or after the effective date of this act. Everybody agrees that the policy was not issued on or after the effective date of the act. Therefore, the question becomes, was the policy in existence? And thus the United Fire versus Boulder Plaza's pithy statement that we need not contemplate the meaning of existence. The point is that in existence has when policies are in existence or when they exist has been addressed a number of times in legislative regulatory schemes of Colorado. For example, CRS 10410.5 it's a notice of intent when a carrier wants to increase premiums. They have to provide notice 45 days before the policy in existence expires. And there's plenty of references in that particular statement. It says, if the insurer fails to meet the requirements of this section prior to the expiration date of the existing policy, the insurer shall be deemed to have renewed the insurance policy. These are things, yes.
The argument of the appellant here, isn't that the policy was in existence, so to speak, but that it's the benefits of the policy remain in existence, right? Because it's an occurrence policy. So that if a claim could be made after the policy expires but relates to an occurrence during the policy period, for all practical purposes, the benefits of the policy remain in existence.
Well, in that case, the legislature would not have had to state that it would have just said it applies to all policies. Because
all policies under which any claim can be made.
All policies under which any claim could be made. Right. It didn't say so. It said in existence. For example, another example of legislature.
That's because of the contract provision, right? You can't go back and modify contracts that are already. That would be a problem that they had with.
Rewriting
a contract that's already in existence. No, there was a big
problem. The constitutional issue that we haven't briefed here, there are constitutionality issues when you have a statute that is unconstitutionally retrospective as opposed to being retroactive. That's not an issue that has been briefed in this case. There are times when it's allowed, as long as it's not unconstitutionally retrospective. Mr. Polk and I are going to be arguing that in about 4 weeks on the other side. And Greystone basically said it best when it said that in existence is only those policies whose policy periods have not yet run. There's no reason here to look at it any different way. What I was going to point to is Colorado Code of Regulation. Regulation 7.25.5-2-11. This happened when there was a transition from no fault to tort liability. And the question was, do policies that were written that had not yet expired when that transition occurred on July 1st, 2003, what's the status of those policies? And what the regulation says existing no-fault policies do not automatically convert to tort policies on July 1st, 2003. So the only policies that could have referred to are policies that were written in less than 6 months prior to July 1st, 2003 that have not yet expired. And so existing policy is a policy whose term has not yet expired. There's actually an unpublished 10th Circuit case called Browning that, never mind, that was a different issue. My time is pretty much out, so if there's not any other questions, thank you.
May it please the court, I am Dennis Polk, that's P-O-L-K, and Ms. Liff has been gracious enough to allow me to respond and rebuttal. Let me begin by addressing the functional distinction that what I will call House Bill 1394, or codified at 1320-808, was intended to address, and one would examine those. The existing policy language and occurrence, like all legislative things, the imprecision of their language keeps all of us employed. But what I can tell you when you examine the legislative history with regard to that, that distinction was intended to differentiate an occurrence-based policy from a claims-made type of policy. An occurrence policy, if one reads the literal language in the Bainbridge decision, it doesn't go out of existence and apply plain ordinary language to it. It does not cease to exist. We have to track three things: an occurrence that happens within the policy period and within the policy territory, which is instructive as to the second issue that this case focuses upon, and whether we apply 1320-808 and its progeny. I, with all deference to the panel and the members who are on General Security, I think even the insurance industry reacted to General Security in a less than positive manner. There is dicta in General Security, I think, that has become embroiled in our language, in our culture of insurance coverage. Let me tell you what I mean. I challenge anyone to find in a CGL policy, a commercial general liability policy, the words or terms resultant property damage. Those are terms that one finds in a homeowner type of policy, and that is a distinction that is important, because here, careful examination of the policy, we begin with what is covered. And this policy says the insurer ultimately is responsible for physical injury to tangible property, including all resulting use of that property. In other words, they are liable for damages caused by that insured's conduct. And it is the endorsements that carve away. What everybody has ignored throughout this case, and I don't think it can be ignored, is the additional insured endorsement that is contained within this policy, and that's set forth in the record and argued before the trial court. And that additional insured endorsement talks about defending as against acts or omissions. Not to be confused with the duty to defend, because the lesson of Heckler, Cotter, and its progeny is, if we assume the four corners doctrine in this case, and we ignore kind of the reality of what has happened in this particular case, the obligation to defend is much broader, and a carrier must search out for coverage under those circumstances. I respectfully submit that, paraphrasing the language found in Heckler and Cotter, you cannot reasonably say that if the complaint brooks of no other meaning, then the duty to defend is triggered. And that's really what we're talking about here. It's talking in the complaint, the Sadar notice, the letters that are sent back and forth to counsel, of at least a basis by which the carrier should have stepped up and defended the underlying action following the mandates of Heckler, Cotter, and its progeny. I respectfully disagree that a careful reading of even general security doesn't suggest that there are no circumstances in which a construction defect does not cause a duty to defend. General security, in fact, is dealing with builders' risk policies, and it's sort of morphed into something broader, which ultimately led to the legislative reaction and the language that's found in the Greystone decision. I also find it remarkable that in the Greystone decision, it was also the American Family, frankly, that was arguing a position 180 degrees different than what they are arguing before this court. No matter how you look at that, and you look at the briefs and you look at that decision, it was American Family that was essentially looking at that issue. Here, because of the contractual risk transfer, the existence of the additional insured endorsement, TCD was entitled to a defense. American Family just said no. Then we have this affidavit that recites hearsay upon hearsay. I see my time's up. I'll address any questions that you may have.
Thank you all for very good arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course, and I also want to thank you for your patience being at the back end of four cases and all the reconstitution that took place. So with that, the court will be recessed and the bailiff shall announce.